Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
sifter.com.au.
Yeah, we took some inspiration from our local cities and towns. I also took some pictures of like local trash cans or like signposts and Google Maps. I also had Google Maps open a lot on my second monitor, and so I could work in Blender and recreate it a bit.
It's pretty interesting that we can convey sort of subconscious feelings by just using specific colors, because I think the park level has that sort of Game Boy kind of color palette. And when we find these color palettes, it's really cool to be like, oh man, this kind of feels like that. Oh, we should use it there. Or how can we emphasize that more?
Hello, this is Lightmap from Sifter, our video games interview show. I'm Gianni. Move through the shadows as a bouncy frog in a super unique puzzle game. Ewald van der Werf and Niels Sleikerman are developers of Skim. They're my guests. They're developers of the games. Before we get into that, here is what's been making the news on Walkthrough, Sifter's news podcast. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Kyle Paletto.
And I'm Gianni DiGiovanni.
And here are the top stories this week on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast for Sunday, 6th of October.
Norway says what we've known for ages, that in-game virtual currencies are dodgy, and they're going to do something about it.
Epic takes Google and Samsung back to court, alleging they're interfering with their alternative app stores.
Ex-EA Australia devs launch a new studio based in Victoria to make new racing games.
And Halo, the groundbreaking console FPS, is going TPS.
You can get every episode of Walkthrough for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or on our website, sifter.com.au, every Sunday.
Join the Sifter community on Discord at sifter.com.au/Discord.
Now, a lot of games, stealth games in particular, rely on you moving in and out of darkness to remain unseen, jumping quickly between one shadow to the other. In this game, you aren't taking out baddies. You're just trying to get across the town. Now, Niels and Ewald, thank you so much for joining me. Welcome to Lightmap.
Thank you.
All right, what is Skim?
Skim is a game about jumping from shadow to shadow. You play as a little shadow creature called a Skim. Everything, human being, has a Skim that lives in their shadow, which is the soul or essence of an object. And you play as a Skim that got detached from that person. And now it's up to you to find your way back.
First game about, and it kind of started from a project while you were studying. Can you tell me how that very first idea came together?
So I was an intern at Extranice, which is Niels's company. And that's also where I started where I got the opportunity to do my final exam project, which is a game. But Skim became, and for the idea, I just wanted to make a game about shadows, and I was really inspired by the mechanics of Splatoon, and so I made something like that, where you jump only from shadow to shadow.
And Niels, you were actually teaching at the college where Ewald was actually studying, isn't that right? That's kind of how you kind of came across each other and started working together?
Yeah, exactly. I didn't teach Ewald all that much because he was doing programming and I was mainly doing like game design and art and that kind of stuff, but yeah, we did bump into each other a couple of times. And at a certain point, I told the other teachers, like, okay, I think Ewald is probably ready for an earlier internship. If he's interested, we would gladly have him. It's so cool. And I was doing a little bit of part-time teaching there. And they discussed it. So the teacher team, they discussed it. And they were like, okay, well, we'll tell Ewald. And Ewald was like, yeah, sure, cool. So that's kind of how it started. So really casually just flowing into an internship that became a great success. He did a lot of cool stuff already. And then they changed the system where they can actually do exams in the field, because that was not a thing before that. So we're a cool sort of experiment with that as well. And yeah, that experiment turned out quite well with Schim doing really good. So yeah.
So take me back to the very beginning. Where did this idea actually come from? The moving between shadows and exploring a town, and I guess seeing the life of a town come together as you move through it.
Yeah, I think the most prime inspiration is the childhood imagination of just jumping from shadow to shadow, or like the line set of crossing. Like the we also had a lot of references, like people, oh, I it reminds me of when I was little on a car,
like a road trip.
Road trip, that's the word. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
you
yeah.
see like the imaginary figure jumping from like, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool to hear all these stories, because we've been around for a couple of events around the world, and different cultures have different kind of things that they imagine based on what you did as a kid. So if someone had to walk to school and they had a crosswalk, then that was what they imagined, and they made these rules in their head. But also, like Ewout said, on a road trip where people try to jump over like lampposts and everything, and have like a character that they sort of runs around besides the window, that kind of stuff. And yeah, we think that's really, really in line with the feeling that we want to convey with Schim as well.
Yeah, for me, immediately I thought of something like The Floor is Lava, where you can only mm-hmm. stand on particular places if you wanted to move around, and it's half the challenge is trying to do that. It's actually, interestingly, I don't know if you're familiar with the cartoon series Bluey, which is an Australian series, and there's actually a big shadow-based yeah. level, which is like an episode of that, which is all about moving between shadows, which was an immediate thought for me as well.
Yeah, it was crazy to hear all these references. People were like, oh, you based it on this. And we were like, what is this? And then we looked it up. It's like, oh, there's a Bluey episode of Shadowlands. Oh, this is amazing. This is cool. This is exactly like Schim. But we had never seen that episode. So it was cool to get all these references that are out there that are similar to the game, have a sort of similar feeling or similar kind of idea behind it. Because, again, I think it resonates in a lot of culture. So it's not weird that we found something that is in line with some other things out there, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, the childlike play is something that really kind of came to mind as I was playing the game as well. It just feels so sort of like innocent and exploratory, and you're sort of really discovering the world as you play. And I'm just curious, was that a design intention behind making this game?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in the beginning, we didn't have that from the start right away, because we had a lot of themes and ideas and a lot of things. Like, we did have a good feeling about what we wanted with the world, but because it started off as an exam, we really focused on, okay, we're going to move through this world and we might have additional ideas, but we're probably only going to hint at them, but not really put them in there. So it was great to eventually scale up as we got a lot of emotion and attention, and it seemed to resonate with people. And that was also the moment where we dived in deeper and thought about, like, okay, what story do we want to tell? Because we do have the idea that we could tell a lot of stories with this kind of world, but we had to zoom in and find, like, what is the essence? What is the core thing of it? And we came eventually kept coming back to that sort of play style, that sort of childlike glee, that sort of innocent joy of when you're young, and convey that kind of in the story as well, because the story is also definitely about that as well.
Ewout, I understand that it actually, the art style, which is so striking, it's really beautiful and simplistic, actually came from something about you in particular. You have a type of color blindness, which meant that you wanted to simplify a bit of this. Tell me a bit more about that.
That's correct. When I started, I really wanted to make just a very simple art style. And so I picked one color palette because I thought it would be very easy to reuse these colors. And so I used it everywhere in the game. And then later we got some feedback from someone who said, oh, maybe it could be nice to look at a different color palette in the next level or something, because it was quite a bright color palette. And so we took that feedback, and every level now has its own color palette based on the on the day or like the theme. Yeah.
It actually reminds me in some of the videos I've seen, you know, almost like the monochrome Game Boy style.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There was like that look, everything was a shade of green on the very first one. And then as you went along, if you played those black and white games, you could actually go and change the entire color palette. You know, it could be all blue or it could be all red or it could be all whatever it is. So that was something, and I'm curious, was that, did that something you intended, or is that just, you know, the nature of it has kind of lent it to be more like those earlier style of games?
Yeah, I think the latter. We do hear that that a lot. It reminds them of the Game Boy.
It's pretty interesting that we can convey sort of subconscious feelings by just using specific colors. Because I think the park level has that sort of Game Boy kind of color palette. And when we find these color palettes, it's really cool to be like, oh man, this kind of feels like that. Oh, we should use it there. Or how can we emphasize that more? Or we've also had a couple where it emphasized something that we didn't want to emphasize. So maybe then we had to change it back and do something else. But yeah, you can really do interesting stuff with it. There's also an interesting example that is the sort of station level, which is kind of in the color scheme of the house style colors of the train railroad thing in the Netherlands. So that's something that you can subconsciously just have in there. And we've had Dutch players who are like, wait, does this reference? Oh, and then that's really cool as well, I think.
Tell me a little bit about designing, I guess, the puzzles and the environments and the levels that you are exploring, because in the levels I played, it's relatively straightforward. At this stage, you're moving from place to place, but that complexity does increase as you go along, and you're able to sort of change the world from the shadow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I must admit that at its core, it's going to be very casual. So most of the game is quite forgiving, is quite relaxing. So there's not a lot of spots that really push you to have like a lot of difficult kind of platforming or puzzling. We internally we use the puzzle light kind of term. So when you sort of have an obstacle or something where you get like an idea for a potential solution, that you try that out, and most of the times that's actually the solution. So it's not like, oh, this is not the solution, let me think about it another way, or let me revisit it, or go from a couple of angles and try to tackle the puzzle in different ways. It's quite forgiving, so the puzzles are, yeah, they are really about figuring it out quite fast and then going with the flow and keeping in that sort of state of, oh, I'm hopping again, I'm keeping this sort of flow in the level. But there's definitely a couple of spots in there that will have you think about it for a second and look around like, maybe I can use this, because you can interact with everything that has a shadow. And then you can activate that shadow. So a good example would be something like a traffic light, where you toggle the way it stands. So it could be red, you make it green. What does that do to the level? And then you can go to different spots again.
Yeah, it's really interesting to sort of see. And then almost with a lot of the moving pieces in there, I was starting to work out the patterns and everything like that. And I've seen in the videos as well that, you know, you're moving like boom gates on for tickets for parking and that sort of thing to move that around, and that controls the flow of traffic, which also then opens up more places there. Do you have something in the game, because you said it's sort of casual, to kind of prompt players to interact with different items, anything that kind of pops at them or anything like that? Because I'm just curious, sometimes you might be sitting there kind of scratching your head, perhaps working out what you might need to do next.
Yeah, it was quite challenging to get the player to get their head around using the interact in the right way, at least, and also to emphasize it and remind them every now and then. So we've done a couple of small things to remind the player, and we really think that it's at a good place right now, because in the beginning we had to really teach the player, don't forget, you can play around with everything, and most of the time it's just for fun, but remember, you can also use it to get to places. So that, I think it took quite a while to get that right, but we're really happy with how it is right now. So yeah, whenever we see playtesters play from the beginning, because you also had a couple of different levels, we just dropped you right in the middle. That makes it harder as well. But if you play from the beginning, then most players at a certain point, they're like, oh, wait, what does this shadow do? And then they experiment and then, yeah, they get the right outcome.
You mentioned that you've put in some, references to people who are Dutch, and they might realize, oh, the color scheme looks like the transport system. But I'm curious about the world itself, because it feels quite real. And I'm just wondering, is it based on a real place?
Yeah, we took some inspiration from our local cities and towns. I also took some pictures of like local trash cans or like signposts and Google Maps. I also had Google Maps open a lot on my second monitor, and so I could work in Blender and recreate it a bit. So yeah, it's definitely inspired by a lot of our local places.
Do you see your local environment in games very often, in games that aren't made by Dutch developers?
No, not at all, I would say. I think the last one I remember where it's like, wait, this is Dutch, is like A2 Racer or something from the 90s maybe, where you just have boards that have names of Dutch cities on it. But I think that's about it. And some games do have the feeling like, oh, this feels like a little bit of Dutch aesthetic. But actually feeling like, oh, we're there, that's quite rare, I would say.
It's an interesting parallel, because we have a lot of games made in Australia, for example, and you very often don't see games that look that Australian. You know, some of the big games that have come out, like Cult of the Lamb, for example, that could have been made anywhere, right? And I'm just curious, is it something you do see a bit more in the indie games, as people want to try and make the places that they live in and tell those different sort of games?
I kind of feel the opposite, because whenever I talk to people, I think indie games make it more distinct, for sure. But I do, a lot of indie game developers I talk to, they also want to make it like epic or interesting or different, or and it's not that they avoid it, but I think it's more like what we had in the beginning as well, like, yeah, but our town is kind of boring, we've been here for so long, and it's just, yeah, we know what it is. And then we see tourists walking around and they love it and they enjoy it, and it's like, wait, there's something going on here. And then you look again and you're like, wait, actually that's kind of cool, and this is kind of a cool feature, and that's a cool building, and oh yeah, the facades of these buildings is cool, and oh, this is different from other countries. And I think it came kind of accidentally, right, Ewout?
Yeah, definitely.
So in the beginning, we had a couple of levels that especially you made just as a sort of reference for a mock-up. And then whenever playtesters saw those kind of places that looked more like the locale that we have, they were like, oh man, this looks like the place I was when I went on vacation, and they got all excited, and we were like, oh, okay, this is interesting. We didn't think about it that much, but yeah, maybe we should go into that direction more. And once we did, everything kind of fell in place even more as well. It became more authentic, it became more realistic, it became more in line with the story that we tell. So yeah, everything kind of fits more.
Has it given you an appreciation of your surroundings now that you're looking at it and go, oh, this could be a level for the game?
Yeah, definitely. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, if I walk around on the streets or something and I see like specific shadows or something, I have definitely made some photographs and be like, wait, this could be a thing. Well, that thing should be removed, but the other things are kind of cool and it's kind of long and it's pointing to something. I want to go there. And then, yeah, you try something in the game and it either works or it doesn't. But yeah. It's cool to look around like that.
Well, one of the things that gave me like a real smile actually was just going through, and you've mentioned that you can interact with a lot of objects just for fun, but you know, just even moving through the bike racks, and every bike bell makes a slightly different sound, and I just jumped back and forth hitting the interact button going back and forth. How many things can people interact with in the game? How many objects have you got?
Do you have an indication, Ewout?
How many unique objects do we have? Maybe like... Yeah, unique. Like we have like 100 humans, I think. So that's, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's...
human interacts. Only for the humans, that's...
Yeah, but also, yeah, human interacts. I think a lot of them, they are repeated. So we have lots of different little poles, and they all do the same interact, but you have a lot of different versions of them. Maybe like 80 different interacts? Maybe 100? Yeah,
and some do feel a little bit different. For example, if you wobble a small pole instead of like a big pole, it does feel different, and the shadow moves quite different as well. But yeah, I think there's quite a few, and we really wanted to convey that, oh yeah, each shadow kind of is different, and create that sort of illusion, like, oh, wow, we're going to try everything. And it's something that I had with old point-and-click adventure games, where you had the feeling like, I can do anything in this world. This is super cool. Everything is sort of in there, and I'm going to try this. Does this work? Oh, yeah, it works. And then you get that satisfaction. We really wanted to convey that. So whenever a playtester tried something, and they were like, hmm. And then we asked, like, okay, what did you expect? Or what did you hope for? And then, like, okay, yeah, we have to make it happen again.
That's very funny that you mentioned that, because I remember in a lot of the point-and-click adventure games that I played when I was growing up, half the time you just try all the different interactions in every object. And most of the time you get a good joke. And that's enough, you know, and that sort of experience is something really, really lovely. One of the things I really loved as well was the sounds in this game. It feels so just gorgeous, basically. And you worked with Moon Sailor to put that together. Can you tell me about how that collaboration came together? Have you worked with them before? And what it's like working with them to make the sound of this game?
Do you want to? So he was nodding like, okay, yeah.
This is the first time we worked with them. And they did both the music and the sound effects, and also the ambience. For the ambience, we took a bit more time with that, because we also want to make it sound very Dutch. And Moon Sailor is a company from Brazil, so that's very different. Sometimes the audio they delivered had some Brazilian birds in it or something. And so we actually asked a friend of ours to record some Dutch birds. And so Moon Sailor took that and made it more Dutch. We are really happy with the sound design and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. To add to that, like you mentioned the bells on the bicycles. That's also such a Dutch thing. And we told them, like, okay, so we have an idea for the bells. And we're like, okay, cool. And they were making notes. And we're like, so we think we need 20 of them. And they were like, what? Sorry? Excuse me? We're like, yes, we need 20, because that's kind of a Dutch thing. We need a broken bell and one that's like high pitched, and one of those bells that you turn, and because everyone knows them and there's so many variations that it makes it feel specific again, which is really cool, I would say.
Yeah, it also made me really laugh when there was a bike that was just thrown into the lake as well. Just sort of like,
yep.
There you go. I've seen it being dredged out before. Many bikes just disappeared into the canals. Can you tell me, what are you most proud of? I mean, you're getting closer to release at the time we're speaking. You're still a little while off, but I'm curious that, you know, you've been working on this project for a little while. What are you most proud of?
Do you
it's
have
a difficult
an answer
question.
Already? Yeah, it's a good question. I have an answer already.
I think the mechanic and art style, those were also the first things I implemented of the game, and the first things already had a very clear vision of when I started. And I'm really happy that it's still really good. People enjoy it, feels smooth. People say it looks nice. So yeah, that's what I'm most proud of.
Yeah, and to add to that, because I think like that's amazing that the art style is like the thing that people click on it, that draws them in, and it's the invitation, and it makes them want to be in the world. So I'm really proud of that as well. But I would say, hearing from people now that we're so close to the release, that it really resonates with that sort of childlike feeling of playing around. That's something that we also spend a lot of time on. And it was something that we were like, if people don't get it, but they just like hopping around, then that's great. But if we can convey this, that would be super cool. So whenever someone says something like that, I just get super happy. And I'm like, yes, we got it across.
Was there any interactions that you had when you've been showing off the game around the world? You mentioned that some of this experience is universal. Everyone has their own version of this, what this game is. And I'm curious, were there any moments that really changed the game when you just saw a child playing it or something like that? Have you got examples like that?
For sure. Huge amounts of examples. I think to our huge frustration as well, where we had an idea and we're like, okay, we're going to convey this. And then we made a build out of it and people try it and they're like, ah, cool, I get it. And we're like, yes, please tell us. And they're like, you're an alien parasite. And you and these kind of things where we're like, oh yeah, okay, please continue talking and I'll make notes and I'll think about it. And how did this happen? And where Ewout and I look at each other and Ewout gets frustrated and he already knows that we have a lot of extra work to do. And So these moments definitely happened a lot. But yeah, we stuck to it, and we edited, we changed stuff, we continued working on it until that moment where playtesters were like, ah, I get it. And then they explained something and were like, okay, cool, that's a good interpretation. And there's still interpretations possible. So not every player sees the same things or they feel the same things, which we think is important. But at least it's in line with what we know is the world is about, and the story and the lore, etc.
Well, that's something I never even thought of when playing, that potentially someone would see a creature that jumps from the shadows could be mean or evil. Like it's that
exactly. Would, yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. So we did something wrong in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, it's going to be a little while before people have a chance to play it, but I'm just curious, what are you excited for people to experience when they do get a chance to play the game?
So I think a good example is we're doing a sort of limited playtest right now on Steam, and people coming to the Discord and telling us about what they think about it and sharing their thoughts. It's already a sort of a little preview of what we can expect of when the game is actually out. Or so it's really cool to see people play. I mean, we make games so people can play them. And you have those moments at events that give us a lot of energy, because then we see them play and interact with it. And then we're like, yes, okay, this is why we do this. But actually having it in people's hands and trying it is just so much different. It's just so cool to see.
How about you, Aval?
Yeah, I completely agree. It's been really nice to see with the playtests, people finally playing it from their comfort of their own home. And so then they can be a bit more honest, I think, than when they're at the event and the developers are standing next to them. So it's been really, really nice to see them, to hear all the positive feedback.
Well, it's really joyful. It's a lovely game. I just love looking at it. Evald and Nils, thank you so much for joining me on Lightmap and talking to me about Shkim.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Hi, Chris Button here from Drop Rate, Sifter's video game review podcast. Star Wars Outlaws gives you a unique look at a galaxy far, far away, with a focus on the scheming, unforgiving criminal underworld.
I thought, when playing originally, that Nyx would have been sort of like something I'd use occasionally, but it became pretty integral to the gameplay. You're kind of always like looking at the angles and seeing, well, okay, what can I do over here? How can I cause a distraction? Do I want to set an explosion off over there to draw attention over there? Or do I want to use that explosive barrel to blow up a few enemies? So, you know, there's a quite an interesting variety in the way that you can approach each particular, which I found really fun. When it breaks bad, you're just like, all right, here we go. It's Star Wars time.
So does it deliver on its galactic size potential? Find out on Drop Rate, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to Lightmap, interesting conversations with video game creators.
The game is out on the 18th of July. You can find out more information by heading to your favorite social platform or check the show notes for links. You can head to schimgame.com or check it out on socials. But again, check out the show notes for that one there. Now, Sifter is produced by Kyle Paletto, Fiona Bartholomaeus, Courtney Borrett, Daniel Ang, Adam Christou, and Chris Button. Mitch Lowe is senior producer, and my name is Gianni Di Giovanni. I'm Sifter's executive producer. Thanks to Audio Technica Australia and Apple for their support of Sifter. And have you subscribed to Sifter on YouTube? It's super easy to do. You can hit the subscribe button and make sure you turn on those notifications, and you'll get an alert when we release a video, like one on Lightmap. You can get episodes of this podcast, our interview show, or our news show, which is called Walkthrough, or Drop Rate, which is our reviews show, in tasty video format. So head to youtube.com/SifterHQ. Give us a follow. That address again is youtube.com/SifterHQ. That's all the time we have for now. Catch you on the next episode of Lightmap. But until next time, have fun.